In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Thanks for listening. Welcome to the program for Wednesday, February 13th, 2013, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every Wednesday in the 3 o'clock hour, it's Pentagon Solutions, where we talk to leaders both inside and outside of the building about the issues that are affecting the Pentagon and look for potential possible solutions to those challenges. And my guest today is someone who knows those challenges quite well. It is Bill Lynn. He's the Chief Executive Officer of DRS Technologies and former Deputy Secretary of Defense and former Comptroller at DOD. Bill, it's great to have you back in the studio. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having me again, Francis.
Happy to do it. It's the S word. It's the only thing that we have to talk about, it seems like, when it comes to the Pentagon right now, how they're dealing with sequestration. I imagine that you saw at least the reports and maybe some of the hearing yesterday with your successor, Ashton Carter, and the Joint Chiefs of Staff all talking about the issues that they will be looking at when if the sequester takes place. And we'll talk about some of those issues this afternoon. What I'd like to start with, though, is I'd like to go back to your tenure at DOD the last time around. And we're going to go back to fall of 2011 when the super committee was still negotiating. We learned then that they were not going to be able to reach a deal and sequestration first started to loom. Tell me what the timeline looked like for some of the contingencies or planning or whatever that you were doing inside DOD at that point.
Well, Francis, I mean, as you know, sequestration's Latin for bad budgeting. I think the original concept for sequestration, I think some of it came out of the old Graham Rudman Hollings, and the original intent, I think, on both sides, Republicans and the Democrats, was that it was so awful that nobody would ever actually do it, and it was hoped that that would be that would impel the super committee to come up with a deal. They were not able to do that. And so we got into the cycle in the starting in the fall of 2011 that it might become a reality. But I don't think in anybody's view it became really a likelihood or a real possibility until very recently. I think I think even going into the debates over this past New Year, when we're looking not only at sequestration but the tax increases, the expiration of the Bush tax cuts, I think the expectation was that that Congress and the White House would come to a deal. That what usually happens in Washington is the political actors wait till the last possible minute, maybe even a little beyond the last possible minute, but then they come to a deal. And indeed they did on January 1st, but it only applied to taxes, really, and they kicked sequestration down 2 months. And now we're seeing it as looming on March 1st, and I think the original idea that this was unthinkable has now withered away, and people think it's now very, very thinkable, and you're seeing DOD now start to do real planning for it.
And at the same time, being very deliberate about the messaging about what their plans are. You know, the Joint Chiefs were very explicit yesterday about some of the items, in particular when it comes to training and readiness, and those are some of the things that we'll talk about later today. Is the big problem here, though, the across-the-board cuts themselves, the way that they're going to be implemented if sequestration happens, or is it just the fact that we are on a declining Pentagon budget in total? Which of any of those elements is the worst part, or is it all just an unfortunate confluence of events, do you think?
Well, it's all of the above, but breaking apart, it's a very, very deep cut, $55 billion in a single fell swoop, and that's, you know, a little bit more than 10% of the budget. To do that in a single act is almost impossible to handle it and protect the things that you need to protect. So that's one element of it. Second, you have the way it's applied, which is really irrationally. It's every program, project, and activity gets an equal cut with no thought as to priorities or national security or any of the other things that would normally go into budget planning. So it's the combination that is really devastating.
Now, one word that I've thrown around and that my colleagues in the media have thrown around regarding this is reprogramming. You're a professional. You can define that term accurately. I'd like you to do that so that we can understand what that really means, and then we'll talk about the potential that exists there.
Well, the department has the ability to reprogram money from one account to another account, obviously account of lesser need to an account of greater need. But to do that, you have to have affirmative approval from all four oversight committees in Congress, two in the House and two in the Senate. Traditionally, that is an elaborate process, and it is done with very much smaller amounts of money. It's not really, it's normally done when you have where you have unanticipated changes in programs, either up or down, and you try and match the programs where, for whatever reason, some fact of life change, you have a lesser need to where, you know, fuel prices have gone up unexpectedly or something, you move the money. But you're moving very relatively small amounts of money in the grand scheme of things. You're not talking about the tens of billions of dollars that would have to be moved in this kind of context. So I think reprogramming, while I'm sure the department will look at it as one of the tools they'd want to use should this come to pass, it will be a difficult one to use in this context.
And when you explain it in that way, it sounds to me like the department generally reserves it for a situation where they're pretty sure that each of those four committees is going to give them the latitude to do it. It's not something that they would try to do in a situation that would be any kind of controversial at all.
Because you have essentially each of the four committees has a veto, it's very, very hard. It's a sort of a black ball system. So it's very hard to do anything controversial with that kind of system.
And the reason that I ask is because it's been kind of advanced as a potential panacea that, well, we'll just give reprogramming power to the agencies, not just DOD, to the other federal agencies too. And it strikes me that hearing your description is just not anywhere near that simple.
It wouldn't be near that simple, and it might help some, but it wouldn't help an enormous amount.
What are the things that are happening in your mind inside the not specifically in Bob Hale's office, but in the financial management arena at DOD right now, mechanically, not policy wise, not any of that, but just trying to work the logistics of the preparations that are going on?
Well, you know, they're doing what a budget team would do. Is they're now, I think, reviewing all the accounts. They're looking at things that like things that unobligated balances where money hasn't been spent and isn't committed yet. They will try and scoop that money up. That means that things that people were counting on won't be done. But at least the initial assumption will be that's better than stopping things where you've already obligated money and you've started partway down the path. So you're also looking for any fact of life changes where things have changed and somehow the bills have dropped. Try and scoop that money up. The problem is that the scale of the demand, 50 or 55 billion in immediate cuts, is going to overwhelm these normal budget tools, which are generally designed for much lesser changes in a budget.
And you talk about obligated funds, and that will obviously, the status of various programs will impact the defense industrial base tremendously. And I mentioned the Joint Chiefs talking yesterday about readiness. That's what we'll focus on when we come back, Bill. Bill Lynn, the Chief Executive Officer of DRS Technologies, my guest on Pentagon Solutions today. You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be right back.
Here's Jeff Eisensmith, Chief Information Security Officer, Department of Homeland Security, on the Federal Executive Forum on Cybersecurity, sponsored by McAfee.
I think a rising star is going to be cyber kill chain. It takes advantage of two really major things here: knowledge management of what has gone down before and anticipating what's coming at us. And it also gives you real-life metrics that we're able to build real business cases of what we need to get the infrastructure where it should be.
Listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group. Log on to Federal News Radio. FederalNewsRadio.com.
Federal IT organizations and prime contractors are experiencing a rapid rise in cybersecurity threats and compliance requirements. McAfee is the standard throughout federal military, intelligence, and civilian enterprises worldwide. McAfee's capabilities are essential to assuring federal networks remain resilient against the latest cyber threats. To learn more about how McAfee can help your organization combat cybersecurity threats, call 888-VIRUS-KNOW or go to McAfee.com/government.
Looking to make a career move in technology? Start your search at PowerJobs.com, the new career site made for Washington's top talent. New on PowerJobs.com this week.
Executive Advisor, Government and Technology at Corporate Executive Board. Apply for this job and other leading positions in the influential industries that make up our region at PowerJobs.com.
PowerJobs.com. Finally, a career site made for you.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
The Washington Wizards are back.
Spins, fades, banks, scores, and one. Okafor. Up court to Crawford. No look pass. Ariza. Stuff to it.
Crawford drives baseline. Whips it in the corner. Sheldon Mack for three.
Single game tickets are on sale now. Call 202-661-5050. That's 202-661-5050. Or buy your tickets online at WashingtonWizards.com/tickets.
Mythix Consulting is hiring. Mythix Consulting is an award-winning Oracle Platinum specialized consulting partner working to enable the Oracle-powered enterprise. And Mythix Consulting is looking for IT professionals that get the job done. Available positions include leading Oracle solution areas like applications, enterprise content management, and big data. Mythix Consulting is the go-to Oracle systems integrator with open positions and ready to hire high-skilled IT professionals. Check it out at mythix.com/careers. That's mythix.com/careers.
For those of you who like to check your connection speed, you can go to broadbandreports.com. You can get their speed test. You can test your upload and download speed. I like to do that periodically. Sometimes my Fios download speed gets up to 16 megabits per second, but this morning I had 10 down and 3 up. And you've got 60 megabits per second. I'd love to have that kind of bandwidth, but 60 could be overkill. But I'd say anything more than 30 is probably not worth the money.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
The 4th Annual Cybersecurity Symposium is almost here, February 22nd at the Capitol Hilton. Brought to you by AFCEA DC, they'll explore U.S. cyber preparedness from a matrix team perspective. DOD, DHS, Intel, and the private sector. They'll have panels on ramping up cyber innovation, understanding our adversaries, and breakouts with CyberCom, Component Commands, and COCOMs. A competition for companies to present their emerging technologies is going on right now. To register, visit afceadc.org/cyber or call 202-701-5808.
Headed to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor, Federal News Radio can be heard crystal clear on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. It's the same great station, just on an added frequency. Get the latest news about the federal government and government contractors. Hear exclusive interviews with the movers and shakers in the federal arena. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Pentagon Solutions continuing this hour with my guest, Bill Lynn, the Chief Executive Officer of DRS Technologies, and talking about sequestration. And we heard a lot yesterday in the Senate Armed Services Committee about readiness. Your successor, Ash Carter, talked about it. Each of the branches was represented by one of the very highest level uniformed leaders as well. General Dempsey was there. And we heard some pretty dire descriptions of what they expect to see in each of their branches. My colleague Jared Serbu is writing about it now on federalnewsradio.com. But I got some interesting messages last night, even in light of the State of the Union address, from people on the Hill who were saying there's a possibility that the leadership and the both uniformed and civilian might be overplaying their hands a little bit. Some of these claims were very alarming. Is there a risk there that that could happen, that people's reaction could be, it can't possibly be as bad as they're making it sound, and thereby maybe tamp down some of the response to some of the warnings that they're trying to get out?
Well, Francis, I think there's a risk. I think what Ash Carter and General Dempsey and the chiefs said, from what I read, I think is absolutely accurate. I think the consequences that they're talking about in terms of readiness, in terms of investment accounts, in terms of furloughing federal employees, I think all of those things are accurate. What I do worry about, in line with your question, is while they're accurate, they won't be immediate. The impacts, this is going to be more of a slow-moving train wreck as opposed to, you know, an immediate crash, at least in most cases. I mean, if you look at if you look at things like furloughs, they're not going to furlough everybody immediately. They're talking about one day a week because they're going to do everything they can to mitigate the impact. So that may, you know, over time, that's going to result in much less efficient operations. It's going to be very hard on government employees' families. You look at readiness. I think it is going to lead to a decline in readiness, but you're not going to see it until the troops are called. That may be months or even more down the road. So you're not going to see, when you say an impact on readiness, well, you don't see it until you ask the troops to do something, and then you find their training has come up short, or their equipment isn't up. To the maintenance standards we want. That's when you'll see it, but that could be, and the impact of this could not, it won't last just weeks or months. It could last years. These things cascade through the systems. And certainly with investment accounts, I mean, it'll cause contractors to make changes, but those changes may result in rifts to employees, you know, weeks, months, down the road. So if people are expecting on March 2nd to see a big bang, they'll probably be disappointed. That doesn't mean anything that was said yesterday was wrong. It just means this is something that builds to a crescendo rather than happens immediately.
It's helpful to understand that too, I think, because the supporters, the folks that we're starting to see talk a little bit more about, well, maybe this wouldn't be such a bad idea, the construct there potentially could be, we get to March 10th, 15th, and everybody goes, well, or some folks say, well, this wasn't so bad after all. And yet, as you say, at some point in time, this will change. We'll get beyond it, whether it's September 30th or someplace else, and we'll have a ramp up process again. Are there elements of readiness that you think that maybe leaders in Congress aren't thinking about when it comes to the back end of when we have to start back up again? Things that you talked about, like we've heard about some pilots that may not fly as many training missions and at some point in time run the risk of losing their certifications and so on.
Well, if it goes on too long, that's what happens. They lose their certifications, and it takes, you know, many months to build them back up. You can only, you know, the pipeline is only so wide, so you can't build them. Even if you have the money, you can't bring them all back at once. You lose training cycles out at the National Training Center. Well, there's only so much capacity there, so it takes months, even years, to bring those back. You lose maintenance availabilities on ships. Again, it will take the Navy months and years to bring all of those ships back up to the maintenance standards that you're expecting, because the capacity, you won't be able to surge that capacity even if with some magic wand you lifted the sequester.
What does this do too for strategic planning, not financial planning, but from a response? Secretary Panetta and General Dempsey released the strategy that people are characterizing as this pivot to the Middle East and Asia back in December. We're in the process now of a new 2014 Quadrennial Defense Review just getting underway. I imagine that trying to do any of that kind of planning is really next to impossible when you don't know anything at all about numbers.
Well, Francis, that's a really important point. We, you know, mostly when we're talking about the the sequester. We're talking about the magnitude of the cuts, which is too deep, and we're talking about the somewhat insane way they're applied, just blunt across the board. But the point that you're making that we've seen, and it's more than the sequester, each of the last 3 years, we've completely changed the defense budget. It's impossible for the Department of Defense to plan in that environment. The Department of Defense has to plan by looking at the threats we face, the environment we face, build a strategy to meet those threats, populate a force structure that implements that strategy, then buys the weapon systems and the training to support it. All of those things take multiple years to put in place. If you're changing the whole budget line every 6 to 12 months, that instability in and of itself, independent of the level of spending, makes it impossible for DOD to put together a coherent program.
One more thought. We'll talk more about some of the challenges of the budget challenges that aren't related to sequestration later in the hour. But on the defense industrial base, you and I talked about shaping the defense industrial base when you were still at DOD and subsequently too. What impact does all of this have on the ability of the department to work with the base to make sure that there's competition out there? I imagine if sequestration happens, we'll see a flurry of M&A. We'll see any number of different things that companies will be trying to do to make sure they can stay afloat in some cases. How does that impact the way the department wants to try to plan and have a healthy industrial base that's going to be able to meet their needs?
Well, I think the impact has been and will be very bad on the industrial base. For the bigger companies, they have the financial wherewithal to survive. But what they do and what they will do is they'll hunker down. They won't invest because they don't know where to invest. So they'll conserve resources. They won't make R&D investments. And they'll reduce the size of their workforce, again, not knowing where things are going. They'll husband and protect their resources. For smaller companies, it's much worse. They may lose a key program or two, and they may not then have the critical mass to sustain themselves, and they may exit the business either by going bankrupt or moving into a more stable commercial line of work. Either one, that's bad for the industrial base supporting the defense of our country.
I mentioned a moment ago that eventually this will end, theoretically at least, on September 30th, or maybe at some other point that Congress decides to push it toward at some point in the future. We'll talk about what that scenario might look like when we come back. Bill Lynn is my guest. He's the Chief Executive Officer of DRS Technologies on Pentagon Solutions today on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Back in just a moment.
Looking to make a career move in technology? Start your search at PowerJobs.com, the new career site made for Washington's top talent. New on PowerJobs.com this week.
Director of Technology and Strategy for AT&T. Apply for this job and other leading positions in the influential industries that make up our region at PowerJobs.com.
PowerJobs.com. Finally, a career site made for you.
Hey, honey.
Hi, Dad.
What you drawing?
It's our house. That's you.
Oh.
Me.
Huh?
Mom and Josh.
Wow.
Playing ball.
You are becoming quite the artist.
When you're a kid, you don't know that home ownership builds communities, that owning a home contributes to higher self-esteem and better test scores. You just know that home is where you play, grow, and learn. The National Association of Realtors wants you to know that home ownership matters to our families, our neighborhoods, and our country. Learn more at houselogic.com/homeownership.
Register now for AFSEA's 12th Annual Homeland Security Event, February 26th through 28th at the Grand Hyatt, Washington. Focusing on working together, keeping the nation safe, this is the venue where you'll hear firsthand about the critical issues facing our country, including cybersecurity, critical infrastructure protection, identity management, information and intelligence sharing, emergency management, mobile communications, and more. Speakers from all levels of government, military, and industry will participate, and contractors and agencies will showcase the latest security products and solutions in the exposition. New this year is a small business matchmaking symposium. This event is proudly sponsored by AT&T, InfoZen, Kinetic North America, URS, and Verizon. Register to attend or exhibit at www.afcea.org, keyword homeland. That's afcea.org.
Here's Brian Dixon, Data Center Consolidation Program Lead, USDA, on the path to FDCCI compliance panel sponsored by Thundercat Technology and NetApp.
At USDA, we're going to endeavor to move people to a most efficient environment for their applications, because until we can identify what storage we're using and we can standardize, until we can do that, you can't get to the next step.
To listen to the whole program, log on to federalnewsradio.com, keyword FDCCI.
Is your agency on track for data center consolidation compliance? Data center experts at Thundercat Technology can help you consolidate, relocate, and maximize your data center assets. By leveraging NetApp Agile storage solutions and proprietary consolidation tools, Thundercat helps agencies achieve compliance and cut costs by up to 50%. To get help with your data center migration strategy, go to FDCCIConnect.com to download the FDCCI strategy guide today. FDCCIConnect.com.
The best of the Atlantic 10 Conference comes to the Charles E. Smith Center in Foggy Bottom in 2013. Get your GW Basketball Conference plan today and watch the Colonials take on Temple, Butler, Dayton, and more. Get all 8 conference games for as low as $80 when you visit gwsports.com/tickets or call 202-994-7325. GW Basketball. Raise high the buff and blue.
A couple of engineers were wondering if airplanes could be more fuel efficient and decided to try a radical redesign. Jeffrey Spedding, an engineer at the University of Southern California, says his South African colleague first suggested removing most of the plane's tail.
If you don't need the tail, then you don't need that long body. If you don't need that long body, the body can be much shorter and fatter than it is now and better able to contain stuff.
Spedding says tests on models suggest it would also use less fuel, and just coincidentally, it looks like a bird.
The wings sit sort of on top of this wider, fatter body than we're accustomed to, which is much more efficient aerodynamically than the long cigar-like tube.
Feasibility may depend upon a plane's mission, but Spedding says it points the way to energy-saving ideas. To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My Pentagon Solutions guest today is former Deputy Secretary of Defense Bill Lynn, now the Chief Executive Officer at DRS Technologies. And we've spoken about sequestration thus far in the show, Bill, and thankfully, at some point in the future, this has to end. We have to get past this, one would think. Theoretically, that date is September 30th. What do you think will be different, if anything, about financial management inside the Pentagon after this has passed than the Pentagon has to deal with today?
Well, it doesn't exactly pass. I mean, sequestration is a 10-year plan that they put in place as part of this budget deal. What would happen in 2014, though, is that you would know from the start of the year that you would have this cut to make, and so you could try and apply it a bit more rationally as you built the budget. So you would think they would do that. The cut is still, in my mind, too deep. It's still $55 billion a year, and applying that deep a cut even more rationally goes too far. I think if you went down, what you'd hope to get to eventually is some kind of deficit deal that I think inevitably has to involve all elements, discretionary spending like defense, entitlement spending like Medicare and Social Security, and increased revenues. As part of that, I would anticipate that defense would still take modest, at least some cuts, off of the President Obama's current proposal. Hopefully, I think it wouldn't go as deep as the sequestration levels. I think in that kind of world, you would see deeper, you'd see some cuts in defense, but hopefully in exchange for that, you get some stability and some ability to plan. And I think that, in many ways, is the best defense can hope for.
Yeah, that actually was going to be my next question. Is that a better outcome, even though the top line would be smaller exchanging a smaller top line for the certainty, would that be a better outcome?
I think that's a much better outcome. Obviously, you don't want to go too deep, but I think, you know, you could see some cuts in defense, and I would give certainly some cuts in defense for multi-year stability.
Mm-hmm. The multi-year stability, too, it strikes me potentially there's an opportunity if we might see some forward thinking. The multi-year planning and budgeting has been talked about on and off for probably as long as there's been a Congress, and any number of reasons are given for not doing it. But potentially there's an opportunity here at least for some multi-year strategizing when it comes to Congress about where they would see budgets headed. That would strike me to be even more useful for the agency.
It certainly is. I mean, if you have some ability to see what the level of resources is over a number of years, you're able to be more efficient in the procurement process. You're able to plan a force structure that's sized against the available budget. So you're able to balance your resources in a far more rational way than you can under a sequester.
I mentioned the QDR and the planning for that that's starting. What do you do? Try to drill down a little bit for me. You were involved in a number of these. When you don't have the certainty that the agency doesn't have right now, how do you try to essentially move the pieces all over the globe, not knowing whether those pieces are actually going to be there when it comes time to execute the QDR?
Well, I think I'm sure they're hoping they're going to have some level of stability before they have to make the QDR decisions, which are at least several months off. But I think what they're going to have to do in anticipation of not having that kind of stability is you're going to have to tier things. You're going to have to put the most important things in the core and make sure that those are funded, and other things that you think are essential to our security but are not quite in the core, you're going to have to present options to the White House and ultimately to Congress that these are the risks that we would like not to take, but at the level of resources that's being proposed, we would have to take. And we're going to have to expose certain regions. We're going to have to underfund certain capabilities because we just can't afford to buy the levels that we think we need.
Do you expect to see, if the sequester happens and these cuts happen in this truncated period of time between the beginning of March and the end of September, is there going to be a ramp-up time? Is there going to be a kind of a rebound time that the agency will require after the next fiscal year starts? Even, I mean, because you've said if the top line's smaller in 14, at least then it will be stretched out over the entire fiscal year rather than smashed into these last few months. Will there be a kind of a recovery time that will be necessary, or will the agency be able to get pretty much back to the way that it operates now then?
Oh, no, I think there'll be if we go into a sequester and it lasts through the rest of the year, the recovery time in some instances will be measured in years, because things that we weren't able to do in this fiscal year, there won't be resources and capacity for it for a number of years. Ship availabilities, readiness, training opportunities will get just pushed out. So we'll be feeling the effects for a year, two, three down the road.
I want to talk about some of the issues that the agency's dealing with that are separated from sequestration. We've mentioned the continuing resolution a couple of times in the program so far. We haven't talked about OCO budgets and some of the other extraneous materials, and we'll do that when we come back. My guest is Bill Lynn. He is the Chief Executive Officer of DRS Technologies, and our conversation continues on Pentagon Solutions.
The Guiding You Home Safely Report, provided and paid for by the National Air Traffic Controllers Association.
The federal debt limit extension deal passed by Congress assures the federal government will not default on its loans through mid-May. But military budget experts say the extension deal could also increase the chances of sequestration. In the continuing budget fight, both parties are so well entrenched in their opposition of other alternatives, such as tax increases or entitlement cuts, it's possible that sequestration may be the least common denominator between the two parties. Sequestration could have a negative impact on jobs, the nation's economy, and essential government services.
Hi, I'm Paul Rinaldi, President of National Air Traffic Controllers Association. Safety is our top priority, and last year was proof. It was the safest year in aviation history. We represent dedicated professionals who work 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, guiding 70,000 flights a day safely to their destination. Next time you fly, remember, we guide you home safely. Visit us at NATCA.org.
Do you hear that? That's a cuttlefish. Or as Raytheon sees it, the future of infrared technology. By studying how cephalopods manipulate light, we're driving innovation in IR imaging. With systems that are lighter, use less power, and deliver revolutionary clarity. After all, when your mission is innovation, your inspiration can come from anywhere. Raytheon. Customer success is our mission. Do you hear that? That's something we make safer and more efficient every day. Raytheon helps manage two-thirds of the world's airspace, modernizing, integrating, and supporting today's air traffic systems. For decades, we've continued to innovate as the nation's airways have continued to grow. After all, when your mission is transforming air travel, the sky's the limit. Raytheon. Customer success is our mission.
Arming your home with an Ackerman home security system gives you and your family peace of mind. Why Ackerman? Because security is what they do, and they do it better than anyone else.
I was paying too much for my home security's monitoring, and I found out it was with a company that subcontracts out monitoring to a third-party company that monitors for hundreds of different alarm companies all over the country. So I made the switch to Ackerman Security. Now I'm paying only $18.95 a month. That's right, $18.95 a month, and there is no cost to switch. Most importantly, Ackerman has its own monitoring center that is both UL and CSAA 5 Diamond certified, so I feel more safe.
Keeping your family and home safe and secure doesn't have to break the bank. Call today and get up to 3 months free of Ackerman's award-winning basic monitoring. 888-999-1070, AckermanSecurity.com.
What you don't know about federal pay, benefits, and retirement can cost you. Get the answers you need with a free publication from NARF, the experts on federal retirement and benefits. Download FAQs about your federal benefits today at fedfaqs.org. NARF, the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association, unravels the most complex rules and requirements feds encounter. Download your free guide today at fedfaqs.org. That's fedfaqs.org.
The Washington Capitals are back.
Bobatska down low, they score! Matt Hendricks, tic-tac-toe!
Back to Green, he's at the top of the right circle. Bobatska, he scores!
Single game tickets are on sale now. Call 202-661-5050. That's 202-661-5050. Or buy your tickets online at Ticketmaster.com.
The Federal News Radio United Way Community Spotlight for February is Easter Seals. Join Easter Seals at the Verizon Center on March 20th for the M&T Bank Bright Stars Night at the Circus. Support as a sponsor or by purchasing a ticket to this special night at Ringling Brothers and Barnum & Bailey Circus that's dedicated to people with disabilities, including wounded warriors and their families. For more info, visit federalnewsradio.com. The Federal News Radio charities are fed by Papa John's.
This is Mark Amtower. I've been advising contractors for almost 30 years, and when they need agency contacts, I always recommend Carroll's GovSearch. With over 350,000 contact listings and over 1,000 government organization charts, they help you find the people you need to reach in all levels of government. Give them a try. Get a free organization chart and a sample listing from their database. Contact Gordon Peel at 703-757-8228. Carroll Publishing, bringing government to you like no other.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Pentagon Solutions today talking about sequestration and the potential impact on the Department of Defense and the Defense Industrial Base with Bill Lynn, the Chief Executive Officer of DRS Technologies. And sequestration, of course, not the only element of uncertainty, as we've talked about through the course of the hour. One of the things that we've discussed is the continuing resolution. What impact does a continued CR, the consensus that I hear at least, is that we're likely to get a continuing resolution for the rest of this fiscal year. That would be the easiest thing for Congress to do, certainly. And given all of the other things on their plate, it would seem logical at this point. What impact does that have, though, on operations inside the agency when you continue with the same line, same line, same line?
Well, continuing resolution is something that we'll have, if it goes the whole year, I think we'll have, even if the sequester were eliminated, a year-long CR would be extremely bad for the Department of Defense. And that's because CR rules were intended for what we used to have, which was short-term continuing resolutions, which it was that Congress just couldn't get all its work done on time. They needed a few extra weeks, and so there was a continuing resolution. But the rules that are applied in that kind of context are you can't move money from account to account. You can't have any new start. That makes sense if you're just waiting a few weeks and you want to make sure you have the authority to do those things. It doesn't make sense if this is actually going to be the year's budget. If a continuing resolution is actually the budget, having a budget with no new program starts makes no sense. But that's, I think, where we're headed, as you said, if we go to a year-long CR. Having a budget where you can't actually have the right amount of money in the operating accounts versus the investment accounts also makes no sense. The operating account requirements have grown from fiscal 12 to fiscal 13, but the budget didn't. If the department is forced to operate at fiscal 12 operating levels, they're going to have to cancel a lot of operations, cancel a lot of readiness training opportunities, and it's going to have a very harsh effect on the readiness of the force, on the strength of the industrial base, on the coherence of our investment programs.
I think that layering part of it, Bill, is something that gets that people lose sight of. Is it's the same, everything's stretched out the same as it was the previous year, and then whatever the budget cuts are come on top of that, and so it's like a multi-layered cake almost, only not nearly as tasty, I imagine.
Yeah, it's bad. This is something that could be fixed. I mean, Congress could work with OMB to change the rules under which continuing resolutions are operate. They could keep the top line the same but allow shifting of money into the operating accounts. They could allow new starts. But unfortunately, those are changes that require some level of trust and negotiation that seems to be absent in today's political environment.
Now, there's a historical context here because this is the first time the Pentagon budget has trended down. We've seen it on any number of occasions, especially in the 20th century. What's different and what's the same this time around compared to the way that this has happened in the past?
Well, Francis, this is the fifth major downturn we're seeing in the defense budget since World War II. The first three came after World War II, then after Korea, and after Vietnam. The fourth one occurred in the Reagan years in the mid-1980s, and it was driven more by fiscal matters, by large deficits like we have today. And then that one was accelerated when the Cold War ended, the Berlin Wall came down, the Soviet Empire disintegrated. I think the fifth one, which is the one we're entering today, has elements of both. We're winding down the Iraq and Afghanistan conflicts, so we are coming to the end of conflicts like the first three, and we're facing fiscal austerity much like we faced in the 1980s. So it has elements of both types.
What lessons should we take out of each of those types, do you think, to apply to what we're looking at doing today?
Well, I think if you look back at the first four, the record is not great in how we've managed drawdown. So I think we should look carefully. I think we have often taken forces out of balance. We've cut readiness too hard. We've broken the fabric of the force. We need to try and avoid those things. I think what we need to seek is we need to make sure that we've balanced near-term requirements, which tend to be overwhelming when the budget's coming, against longer-term needs. We need to make sure that we protect future technology. Now, we've done this successfully in the past. Stealth technology originated in the years after the Vietnam conflict. Even though the budget was going down, we were able to protect that critical technology. It's one of the foundations of our capabilities now. So we need to be able to do similar things as we're looking forward. In simple terms, I think what you have to do in this kind of environment is you have to make hard decisions early. You can't wait. It's not going to get better. If you can't afford it today, you certainly aren't going to be able to afford it in the future.
You talk about the potential for a hollow force. General Odierno talked about that at the hearing yesterday. My colleague Jared Serbu writing, he said yesterday, I began my career in a hollow army. I do not want to end my career in a hollow army. He graduated from West Point in 76, which was about the time that you're talking about the drawdown after Vietnam. So that's certainly on the minds of the military leaders that are trying to make these hard decisions early, as you say it. That process, are those decisions that can be made in an uncertain environment like we're in now, or are those decisions that have to wait for more certainty?
Well, I think it's going to be very, very hard to make those kinds of decisions in a sequestration scenario where you have no flexibility, you have no ability to move money around, you have no ability to protect certain programs while cutting others more deeply. So I think going forward, if we're going to see a declining defense budget, which is where we are, we need to give the department as much flexibility as possible to do its planning and as much stability as possible to be able to see as far ahead as possible as to what levels of budgeting. And that's the best way to avoid the scenario that General Odierno talked about.
We could do probably a whole nother hour on sequestration, Bill, but I can't have you here without picking your brain about cybersecurity, especially in light of the executive order that the president released last night after the speech. So let's talk a little bit about cyber when we come back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Bill Lynn, Chief Executive Officer of DRS Technologies, my guest, and back in a moment.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
You're dedicated to your agency's mission. And at Federal News Radio, we're dedicated to making that mission easier. We give you access to the people, policy, and programs that affect you every day from the voices that matter most. Hear for yourself. Federal CIO Stephen Van Rokel.
The mentality of let's cut the bottom of our list off, the things that are least effective, that are maybe duplicative, and let's take part of that and let's feed the top of the list. We can invest in innovation. We can invest in cost savings, efficiency and effectiveness of our employees or services that touch citizens.
Former DOD Chief Information Assurance Officer Robert Lentz.
The CIO is really the focal point in an information age business. Unfortunately, they oftentimes get trivialized to just manage the IT budget. In fact, I think the CIO has actually lost influence and power.
In your car, online, on the go on your mobile device. Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Just a few minutes left with Bill Lynn, the Chief Executive Officer of DRS Technologies and former Deputy Secretary of Defense. And you came today to talk about sequestration, and you got a little cybersecurity thrown at you. And so I appreciate a chance to talk to you about the executive order. Now, it strikes me that although the executive order, the agencies have been asking for something to happen from some quarter for a long period of time, Congress still has a role in doing something to help not just DOD, but all of the agencies do better with supporting their cyber readiness and defenses. Is that fair to say?
Oh, I think it's absolutely accurate. The president's executive order, I think, was an essential step, and it's a step where he can, with his executive powers, he can promote and allow greater information sharing, which is an important step in terms of increasing the capabilities of the, particularly our critical infrastructure suppliers, the power grid, the financial networks, transportation sector. so that you improve their overall understanding of the threat and you share best practices. So, and that's something we did when I was at DOD in the Defense Industrial Base, and we had very good results from it. And that's a good step, and that's an executive step. Another step that needs to be made in critical infrastructures, we need to start setting minimum standards. And those can't be done without legislation. The president can't arbitrarily tell industry what kind of standards they have to meet. And you have to be careful about how you do that. You don't want to impose unreasonable costs. But on the other hand, the defense of the nation requires that these infrastructure sectors continue to operate. So it's part of our national defense. So there's a government role in this. It's a shared public-private partnership. And Congress, I think, does need. They weren't able to act at the end of last year. I think partly the president's put the executive order out yesterday, trying to prompt congressional action. I certainly hope he's successful.
Are we on the right trajectory? Not just at the Pentagon, but your sense of all of the civilian agencies, are we on the right trajectory at being able to get a handle on at least knowing what the threats to the networks are now?
I think we're making progress. Whether we're on the right trajectory is hard to say. I think the threat is getting worse. It's moving from disrupting networks to actually destructive actions. And it's moving, I think, outward from major nation states to rogue states, to even terrorist groups. And we, at some point, you're going to see a marriage of those really destructive threats with really malicious actors. And that's the point that you need to have our defenses at the top point. And how much time we have, there's a window of opportunity for us to act. How long that window is impossible to say.
And this, again, just like sequestration, is something we could probably do another whole hour on, Bill. Unfortunately, we don't have it, and I'm grateful for the time that we have had to talk today. Thanks very much for being on the program.
Thanks for having me, Francis.
Bill Lynn is the Chief Executive Officer of DRS Technologies, my guest on Pentagon Solutions Today. We'll archive this conversation and post it later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. All of our Pentagon Solutions interviews are posted there for you to listen to anytime you like. And hour number two of In Depth with Francis Rose coming up on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. More analysis throughout the program today on President Obama's executive order and some reaction to what agencies may have to deal with in light of the State of the Union address last night. In Depth with Francis Rose continues in just a minute.